Swinging spells down the street, same old decks we played last week. It's MTG in quarantine. We're all right. We're all right. MTG in quarantine podcast. Heyo, what is up, everybody? My name is MJ, and you are listening to the MTGN Quarantine Podcast, where the motto is EDH, community, now and always. As usual, before we get started here today, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. Find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGNQuarantine. It's a huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Bence, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, and Coach J-Ro for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGNQuarantine. And did you know that I am a Quiver Time brand ambassador? So if you want to pick up your very own Quiver Time case, bolt case, Orion Playmat Tube, or any of the Quiver Time family of products, you can go on over to quivertime.com, put in promo code MTGIQ in all lowercase. Again, that is MTGIQ for 10% off your order. Again, every purchase helps support the channel, and it's greatly appreciated. You can also pick up your very own MTG in quarantine branded playmat over at Inked Gaming. That's INKED. gaming.com. Got two really awesome versions, both the full color logo as well as the grayscale version. They're both look killer, and you're going to want one for you and all of your friends for 2024. So again, you can head on over to Inked Gaming, INKED gaming.com. Use the reference link in the link tree in the episode description below, and every purchase helps support the channel and is greatly appreciated. Now on to the episode. So it's been a while since I've done a CDH deck tech, and I'm sure a lot of the folks out there listening to this are really been chomping at the bit for an episode, so here we go. So in order to do today's episode, I'm bringing on someone who I've tried to get on for many months. We weren't able to get it to work schedule-wise and whatnot, but that ends now. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce the one, the only MTG Hot Dog. Welcome to the show.
Hello, MJ. Thank you for having me. This is so good to be here. As you said, after months of schedules not lining up or illness, we are finally virtually together.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, the last time we saw each other was at Silicon Dynasty 2, and that was already at the end of September. So this is January. That should tell the folks at home that it's been at least 100 days since we last bumped into each other at an event.
We did, and to make matters worse, we bumped into each other playing in the loser bracket.
Oh,
the
Weenie yes.
Head Junior Redemption Tournament, as I call them. But and you beat me, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I did. And I went into not really painstaking detail, but some detail in my Silicon Dynasty 2 wrap-up. So again, if the good folks out there haven't listened to that, you can hear me talk all about Godo Bandit Warlord, like I actually know what I'm doing with that deck. So again, if you're interested in hearing more about that particular story, that's in a different episode. But yeah, we are here to talk about the deck that you are piloting there, Lauren. That is going to be Dehata, Binder of Wills. But now that we've given you the preview about what deck you're going to be talking about, why don't you tell the good folks at home first who you are and what you do?
Yes. Hi, my name is Lauren, also known as MTG Hot Dog or MTG underscore Hot Dog. I am a CEDH or commander. I'm a CEDH tournament grinder, playing a lot of different events, in-person events. I do casting for online events. That's been a recent thing. I've recently cast the Combat Step Arcane Series 1. I cast Path to the Peak. I cast the CDH 8K in Atlanta, Georgia by Eminence Gaming. I'm a member of Eminence as well. I run their social media. I am on a bunch of Commander videos on YouTube, and I like casual Commander as well. I'm a signed card fiend. And I haven't announced it on Twitter yet. You'll hear it here first on MTG in Quarantine. But I have just finished my Nekusar deck, and it is 100 cards, 100 artists. I have no repeated artists, including my basic land. So I'm very excited about that. I love Magic. I also love pre-modern, draft, I think that's what I'm into right now, but it kind of fluctuates. But that's who I am.
Awesome. And where can folks find the stuff that you do?
You can find me, if you look up on YouTube, the MTG Hot Dog Collection. You'll find all of a collection of all the YouTube stuff that I've been on various channels. I'm on Twitter way less than I used to be. I used to be on way too much, MTG underscore hot dog, and that's going to be my username for all socials. I have one TikTok video. I might try to do more of that in the future. And Instagram as well, but my Instagram is more of my personal life stuff. So if you're into that and want to see more than just a goofy hot dog and me going to random art things, then check me out on Instagram as well.
For sure, for sure. And again, shout out to Eminence Gaming as well. So,
Yes. Yes, creators of Command Tower, not the card, but the software.
that's not confusing at all, is
Not at all.
it? Yeah, so yeah, you did mention casting. I know that we're going a little bit off the rails here before the deck tech, but I'm just curious to know for the folks out there, what exactly is casting?
Casting is during a tournament, either an online tournament, and they do this. This isn't just like a CDH thing. This is a across the board of Magic, like Modern, Legacy. They all have event coverage. But it is watching the gameplay, watching the feature match of that, the chosen feature match, and commentating on it, much like a sportscaster would. You're watching the gameplay, you're reading the signposts for the audience of, okay, this land is telling me what this opponent is doing with this specific deck. I like to speculate, okay, this is kind of what I see their game plan going as. This is what their opponents need to look out for. And really just kind of being a voice for the audience as they're following along, watching a live gameplay, much like a sportscaster would, but you're instead of, football or hockey, you're doing it for Tournament Commander, which is awesome.
Yes, and that is also the reason why I would actually never be very good at that kind of job because I really suck at CDH. Spoiler alert, I'm not very good at this game, but that's neither
Don't
here
know
nor
if
there.
that's. I don't know if that's true. I think you're being hard on yourself. I saw you rocking Godo, and you definitely if we're paired again, I'm keeping my eye on you. I'm not taking it as a free win.
Fair enough. I mean, honestly, I feel like Godo, it's actually more challenging, I think, than folks give it credit for. So, to play that deck, as much as people say, oh, it's the easiest deck to play when getting CDH, I really think that's not true. But again, that's a whole different episode, right? Again,
Definitely.
if folks are really interested in hearing more about my Godo journey, definitely go on over to my episode on Godo Bandit Warlord, the CDH deck tech that kicked off this whole series with Ryan from Playing with Powers. So yeah, definitely go check that out if you're interested and you haven't heard that yet. But anyway, everything aside, we are here to talk about another red deck, but three colors, including white, black, and red. So you kind of get the whole tree Mardu trio right there. We're going to be talking about Dehata, Binder of Wills. So how this is going to work is we are going to talk about exactly what this deck does, what the win conditions are, and some of the really cool synergistic cards that we haven't really focused on in those two sections. And then we're basically going to try to tell you, the good folks at home, why you should play this particular deck with a Planeswalker at the helm, which I think is the first time I've actually had. Actually, no, second time I've had to say that. I did have Minsk and Boo on here earlier, but yeah, a very, very different style of player. So, anyway, Lauren, what does Dehata do? Read out the card, please. And what exactly is this deck's game plan?
Yeah, happy, Mardu Mommy, Dehata, Binder of Wills is an all-time favorite, and actually I gravitate towards this deck. It does everything I want to do, but I'm still happy to talk about it. So Dehata, Binder of Wills is a 4 mana, 1 red, 1 white, 1 black, 1 colorless. So Mardu colors plus 1, Planeswalker that enters with 5 loyalty counters. Dehata has a +2 ability. Up to one target legendary creature gains vigilance, lifelink, and indestructible until your next turn. Has a -3. Reveal the top 4 cards of your library. Put any number of legendary cards from among them into your hand and the rest into the graveyard. Put a treasure token. Create a treasure token for each card put into the graveyard this way. And her -11 is gain control of all non-land permanents until end of turn. Untap them, they gain haste until end of turn. With the last bit of rules text on this card reading, Dehata, Binder of Wills can be your commander. So, I know a lot of, it's a little innocuous, The ability that we care most about is that -3 ability. You reveal the top four cards of your library, and you can put any number of legendaries from among those revealed cards into your hand, and every card that goes to your graveyard generates you a treasure token. That is a extremely potent ability, the ability to turn something like a Jeweled Lotus, which is zero mana artifact, Black Lotus for your commander, to cast your Dehata, and then turn that immediately into treasure, mana of any color, usable mana. It's three Lotus Petals in that way, stapled to an activation of a Planeswalker. Dehata becomes way more potent, and the way the deck gets so good is with a little card, a very obscure CDH card called Underworld Breach. I don't know if you've ever heard of it before.
No, never heard of that card before. Is that what those kids from Standard were talking about?
Yeah, so good it got banned in Standard. But do I need to explain Underworld Breach?
I mean, we've had Underworld Breach on here many, many, many times. I think really where we want to go is how do you use Breach? What are your Breach lines to try to win with this deck? Because you're able to make treasures off your commander, but we want to know exactly how you turn those treasures into gold.
Yeah, it's into a W. The cleanest way, or the excuse me, let me backtrack. The sort of premier combo in this deck is you have Dehata, you have Underworld Breach, and then you have a old sorcery from Urza's Destiny. Urza's Destiny, the one with the little like beaker, the science beaker.
Mm-hmm.
You run a little card called Flicker. That is the namesake for the ability when someone's like, I'm going to flicker this. That ability is from this namesake card, which is one white, one colorless sorcery. Remove target non-token permanent from the game, then return it to play under its owner's control. So, with Flicker, with Dehata, and with Underworld Breach, you can Flicker Dehata, mill four, just bin them all, doesn't matter what they are, make your four treasure. And then you can escape Flicker from your graveyard with those three of the four cards that you just milled, targeting Dehata. That will generate you two treasure per rotation and one card in your graveyard, till eventually you can infinitely fill your graveyard with... you can churn through your entire library, filling your graveyard with anything you need and be able to assemble a win from there. Eventually you want to start finding something like a grinding station and a free mana rock to just expedite the process and not have to rely on Dehata just to mill yourself, fill your yard.
Mm-hmm.
Once your yard is filled, and you have to be kind of selective with how you're escaping your flicker to make sure that you are not not exiling a win con. Once you find something like a Praetor's Grasp, you can Praetor's Grasp an opponent to find their fastest oracle. Typically in a CDH pod, you are going to have at least, probably on average, like 2.25 decks. But in reality, two decks that have a fastest oracle in them. You're going to be generating a lot of mana from the treasures. You Praetor's Grasp them, cast your fastest oracle. You can win with their fastest oracle. You can also assemble some of the combo lines. You have a Twin Flame dual caster mage combo in this, so you can assemble that through milling through your graveyard very easily. Other win cons in the deck are, you can set up a Bolas's Citadel line, so it can be a storm deck in that way. You can generate a lot of mana with, if you have a Burgi and a Bolas's Citadel, kind of churn through your deck. The average mana value of at least my list is, let's see here, the average mana value of my deck is 1.44 including ad nauseum. This deck aims to be a turbo deck. You want to power out Dehata very quickly and start filling your graveyard very quickly. Or if you have to pivot off of that, you want to find a Necropotence early on and be doing the same things, finding your two card combo with Twin Flame and Dual Caster Mage. This deck makes a lot of mana. I think like 60% of the cards in this deck make mana of some, in some capacity, whether it's a Rite of Flame or a Mana Rock or a land. Or you want an early Necropotence, be able to set up your combo turn, a turn two Necropotence going into your turn three, drop a Grand Abolisher, and you should be able to find your combo depending on how deep and how good your Ad Nauseam is. And the thing to note, I by no means invented this deck, kind of the history of this deck. I don't know if that's something I can get into. But
Let's give it a shot.
yeah, this deck was popularized in the Japanese meta, actually. And it was doing well in Japan, and nothing was really happening in the US with it. And then Zane, owner of Eminent Z-Robbed, he really got into it and he really believed in this deck. He kind of popularized it, I would say, or put it on people's radars, but didn't really convert that into tournament results. And I thankfully was able to, with back-to-back top 16 runs in a week with this deck in person large events. So it's kind of cool to see this deck having origins in a kind of a meta that we're not used to, because I think Lamora's did a video on the Japanese meta. Some of those decks, there's a lot of differences in regional metas, and Dehada is kind of a product of attributing that. Dehada also thrives on slower metas, I would say. There was a trend where people weren't really going for their wins. They were kind of sandbagging this interaction or sandbagging Rhystic Studies or what have you. And Dehada is kind of a parasitic deck in that way, where it's very good at finding a window. It's also very good at making its own window for the win attempt. And that's something I really enjoy with this deck, is you can be somewhat parasitic at the table. You can let your opponents use their interaction. I mean, it sucks because sometimes you can just get your commander spell pierced, which feels terrible, but it's very opportunistic. It takes You're not really going to do much in terms of interaction against the table. You're going to remove specific stacks pieces maybe that affect your game plan, but you really benefit on your opponents kind of tiring themselves out or not going for their win themselves, or tutoring for interaction rather than a win, and then you just boom jam, and you usually will find success with this deck.
Pretty much sounds like every non-blue deck in CDH these days, where everything's kind of mid-rangey unless it's a turbo strat or heavy stacks. It's like if you're not running blue, you kind of have to wait for your window because everyone's running seemingly 10 counter spells in their blue deck, and it just gets pretty ugly pretty quickly. So you got to pick those spots.
Right, exactly. And some of the cool synergies that are in this deck too is we have a few legendary creatures that make Dehada. So you can't back to back minus Dehada. You have to minus plus then minus. So that's three turns, and you'll get eight cards in your graveyard. We have some legendaries in the deck to take advantage of Dehada's life gain, which is important with cards like Ad Nauseam and Necropotence. We have Burgi, Hope of Gearpour, which is a which is an orange chant on a stick that you can make indestructible with lifelink, which is extremely cool to have that. It's also very, very easy to cast. We have Lotho, Luris, Magda, and Ragavan are our other legendary creatures in the deck. So they can benefit from Jihada's ability. Magda's kind of an iffy one because you want Magda to tap to make treasures. That's the other option that we have if we need to pivot, is we can do a Magda line where we're grabbing a Bolas's Citadel with Jihada's treasure, swing with Magda. We have five treasure right there, and we're able to easily get. We're usually going to get a Bolas's Citadel. We're not going to get a One Ring unless we need to crack a top deck tutor for whatever reason. But if we're Search for our library, we're going to negate a top deck tutor, so that doesn't really make sense. But that is another pivot line that this deck has. The other seemingly, not seemingly innocuous, that's not the word I want to use. Luris can hit most of the critical pieces in our deck to recur them. Grinding Station is the MVP of this deck as well with our breach lines. Luris can also bring back a Grinding Station, and Gosh, looking at this list, I get so excited. The one kind of fringe card I would say I have in here is Goblin Welder. That's a card I believe in and I'm still somewhat experimenting with. But Goblin Welder is not, it's a symmetrical effect, it's not an asymmetrical effect, so you can do it to your opponents. So if you're one, if you're milling yourself, you're filling your yard, you can put a One Ring, a Bolas, a Citadel, some of those more expensive artifacts, and you can turn the hottest treasure into a Bolas, a Citadel. Or into a One Ring, which is an extremely powerful effect. Granted, you don't get the protection, but still, drawing cards is very good. Or say there's a Graph Digger's Cage, or there's a trying to think of other problematic, lots of problematic artifacts that stop our deck from doing with it what it wants to do. Goblin Welder can remove those from the battlefield, trade it with something in an opponent's graveyard, say a Thalwar Stone. I vividly remember a game where someone had Jeweled Lotus and a bunch of stuff, put a Thalwar Stone out, and then played their commander, and I removed the Thalwar Stone and replaced it with the Jeweled Lotus. That felt a little cheeky. I'm not 100% sold on it, but it is very good. The other, I mean, if we really are hurting, we have with Breach, or even if we're just drawing a lot of cards and making a lot of mana, we have Bowmasters and Wheels. If we just need to power through, clear the board. Life totals are getting low towards the end of the game. We can clear out opponents that way as well. And we have some extra turn effects that really give us the second chance to redeploy. We can plus Dehada. We only need a couple more cards in our yard to go off. We have a last chance and a. I personally run Chance for Glory. I'm sorry, we have a Final Forkin and a Chance for Glory. This deck does not have a lot of problems with mana. Chance for Glory, one more pip, but also can be instant speed, as opposed to like a Warrior's Oath or a Last Chance. Take an extra turn, you lose at the end of that turn. I like Chance for Glory, but I'm not 100% sold on it in this deck, but it is in there.
Okay, so it sounds like you've got a lot of things going on in this particular deck that pretty much revolves around a planeswalker and then revolves around a single ability for the most part.
I always make the joke. People are like, they sit down, they see Dehada for the first time. I'm like, oh, what does this deck do? I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm just trying to get to the minus 11. I'm trying to use the Insurrection ability, which is not the case. It really focuses on Dehada's -3, just churning through your deck, making your graveyard your second library, your graveyard's your second hand in this deck, in this case, and being able to break parity on that and not have it be a loss, but a way to, fuel your deck rather than losing those cards. Yawgmoth's Will's in there as well in case we lose
Breach.
Underworld Breach. Underworld Breach. Yes, thank you, thank you. The other like weird fringe things that we do have, if we're doing the flicker line with Breach. And when we have to exile all of our cards for whatever reason, if you have a Mayhem Devil out, you're going to be cracking two treasure a cycle and generating two treasure. So I don't know the math offhand, but you will make a lot of treasure ultimately. And you can use the Mayhem Devil to clear the board, kill people, kill players, excuse me. Same with like Dockside. There's ways to Dockside Mayhem Devil. You can use the Mayhem Devil to kill the Dockside, bring it back from your yard. Generate a bunch of treasure that way and then clear the table with, again, just cracking treasure with Mayhem Devil.
Yep, a lot of stuff going on in this particular deck. It's kind of crazy, honestly.
Yeah, it's the packages are tight and the ways to get there are many. The deck is even compared, I mean, I've played CDH for a couple of years now. I've played a bunch of decks. This is the most resilient deck I think I have ever played. There's tournament games where I have been able to attempt to win, get stopped, reattempt to win, get stopped, attempt to win, and then I can get the win. It is so powerful. You can go for it 2 to 3 times in a turn. Or you can go for it twice in a turn and go for it twice the next turn. I've found consistently, again, this is truly one of the most resilient decks I've ever played.
Interesting, because a lot of folks out there are going to say that this doesn't wouldn't hold up. So it's very interesting to hear you say that.
Yeah, I mean, just your card quality is high. You have a lot of ways to generate mana, and you have a lot of ways to generate card selection and card draw. It definitely does hold up. I admittedly, I don't think this deck is very beginner friendly. I think you kind of have to be a sicko to play this and to play it, right. And that's okay. Usually, like you. People think when they think of like Turbo, they think of Rog'Sai, which does similar things in terms of ad nauseum and breach and all of that stuff, but you have the blue protection. And while granted this deck doesn't have blue, you have white to do a similar thing, just in a little bit more of a proactive way rather than reactive. You have Tithe Taker, which notably taxes. Let me reread Tithe Taker before I say something silly. Like Tithe Taker that can tax channel abilities, which opponents don't expect. You have Grand Abolishers. You have one more defense grids. All of these things, and all of these things are easily found either through tutors or like Magda can grab a defense grid to set up your win. It's almost toolboxy in a way. I found that the resiliency that's found in this deck is you don't want to get stuck on the same game plan. But if you are able to accurately read the table and change your game plan, it pivots. The resiliency is in its ability to pivot. And it's finding not just the one way to win, but finding the multiple ways to win and piecing those together. A game comes to mind where I cast a tool or Let me backtrack. Sorry, cut that part. Like a game comes to mind where I to get my win, I had to beseech the mirror for a dual caster mage to then twin flame, and it's stuff like that that just gets me very, very excited, and it can win in unsuspecting ways. Like I've oppositioned agent. No, I'm sorry. I've dual caster is like a weird MVP of this deck. Because sometimes people just see it for the combo, but sometimes you can use it just for your own tutor to get you over the hump to set up a breach line win. Or I've dual caster maged at Eldritch Evolution X equals 2 for a Dockside at instant speed. It's incredibly potent, but it's finding those signals. And again, you have to be kind of a sicko to and just an absolute like weirdo mutant to have that mindset, because it's not for everyone. And I think there's a lot of people that play this deck or they see this deck and think that it's cool and it doesn't click. And that's fine. It's the learning curve is tough, I think, on this deck. And it's also like when I first started playing this, it was not like fun. It was a puzzle for me to figure out, and I was stubborn enough to try to figure it out. But I was like, wow, this deck's like kind of bad. When I first started playing it. And but once you hit that first win, you go, okay, I figured it out. I have a Horn of Harnfell, and I can Vamp Tutor with my Horn of Harnfell out to then get that card to fuel my line. Horn of Harnfell is another MVP of this deck, by the way. It's another great way to go off, especially once you're making a bunch of mana. But I can sing my praises about this deck for hours and hours. It has brought me a lot of joy. I even have a Dehada Playmat and a Playmat holder as wall art. I'm very passionate about this deck.
I had absolutely no idea about that. This is the
Rage of
first time
Captain
hearing.
Abeos.
This is the first time
That's
hearing this,
another.
honestly.
Rage of Captain Abeos is also very good in this deck. It's another. That's the one I was forgetting with Grand Abolisher, Tithe Taker, Rage of Captain Abeos, and Defense Grid. Instead of counter spells, and we also have silence and orange chant.
Yeah, you get the whole enchilada there.
Yeah, it's so good.
Wow. And like you said, this is a very resilient deck, and it's got a bunch of, and then just good value pieces, honestly, because in Mardu colors, you have, like you said, a lot of just good pieces in here that are going to go in any particular deck to help make it run. So you're able to play that mid-range game if you need to. You can turbo out if you have to, and you can survive the long game, which is extremely important, especially tournaments.
Yeah. Yeah, and because your planeswalker is a command, or excuse me, because your commander is a planeswalker, things like Out of Time is very good in this deck, especially when you have Flicker. You can Out of Time Flicker it later on if you need to really keep the board clear. You want to keep Dehada alive. Attacking or killing Dehada is pretty bad, because that means if I cast Dehada, play it, I will probably untap with 3 mana and then have 3 to 4 treasure. I think you just recast Dehada and fill my yard again and remake the treasure. It's usually bad to attack Dehada, which is another cool thing that you have. You have a commander that opponents don't like to use interaction or combat to deal with.
Yeah, but I mean, also you do have to consider the fact that more counter spells can hit it, which is also makes, again, timing very important.
That's true. Yeah, I, as someone who's had my Dehada Force of Will, Force of Negation, Force of, you know, Lauren gets screwed over, Spell Pierce, I have a vivid memory. I was like, oh, cool, I have a turn one Dehada. Bam, I'm just going to jam it. Shauna Gillies, who I'm sure you know, she one blue mana open, immediately taps it. My Jihad of Spell Pierce into the next day. So feels terrible when it happens, and your opponents do feel like geniuses when it happens.
Yeah. But again, that's just the real puzzle of CDH right there, is just figuring out where your window is and hoping your opponents don't have any interaction to stop you from doing what you want to do. So...
100%. Yeah, that's the biggest, not even just with Dehada, but I think with CDH as a whole, learning when to pick your windows. Just because you have the win in hand doesn't always mean you should go for it, especially if you know someone just, if they've revealed their hand and, or you know they have counter magic or they've drawn 15 cards off of Rhystic Study. I mean, if it's your only opportunity, I say cast your spells. You want to play to win. You don't want to play to not lose. So if that's your only, if you go, hey, I'm going to pass to this guy with the Rhystic Study, and they're going to go off anyway, you might as well try to go for your win. But sometimes if you just know, you got to pick your windows appropriately. It's you got to cast your spells. I'm ranting a little bit, but you also have to cast your spells in an educated way.
And that right there, honestly, is the biggest learning curve out of CDH. But again, that's a completely different episode. We're not here to talk about introducing CDH, because I hope that everyone out there is already trying CDH. So we hopefully don't need to give any more testimonials as to why people do need to start playing. But if you're out there and you're listening to this episode and you are interested in playing Dehada, you can find the deck list in the episode description below. I will be linking that there so you can check this stuff out. And again, most of these cards appear to be in foil, so be prepared for a lot of those weird little Moxfield Sheen animation things.
Yeah, the deck is almost foiled out.
Except for the few cards, I suppose, that don't have foil copies. Looking at you, Yawgmoth's Will, but...
Yawgmoth has a foil.
Oh, it does? Oh, it's right. It doesn't have some weird judge foil or something.
Yeah. It's like $1 million judge promo. The duels I don't have foil. I don't have a foil One Ring. I don't have a foil Wheel of Fortune. I need a foil Goblin Welder. I need a foil Orange Chant and a red Elemental Blast and a Grinding Station. But yeah, I'm like, I think 10 cards shy of it being everything that can be foil is foil.
Mm-hmm. And then, you have a nice advantage over your opponents, because then they can't see what's on your board when you're playing under bright lights at a tournament, right?
Exactly. So. I'm like, oh, sorry, it's so shiny. Sorry, you can't see.
Shiny. But yeah. Anyway, Lauren, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today about this deck. Obviously, you really love this deck, and it was really cool that you were able to take the time to share it with me and with the audience out there.
Yes, thank you so much. I genuinely love Dehada. Love talking about Dehada and all the cool things it can do. And if anyone who is listening is interested in Dehada and wants to talk about Dehada, wants to compare lists or talk about cards, please feel free to reach out to me, any social media, or Discord. Discord on MTG Hot Dog, no underscore. Any other social media, MTG underscore Hot Dog. Please reach out. I love the Yada so much. yeah, any questions, concerns, and MJ, thank you so much for having me. Please let me know when this is coming out so I can post it everywhere. I'm very excited and very appreciative that you let me on.
Yeah, no problem. It was good having you, and I really love having these CDH deck techs out there because it helps me learn about these decks that are out there, kind of how they work, and also gives the folks at home out there a chance to, you know, really hear the breadth of what's out there in CDH, because it's not really, it might feel like a monolith sometimes, even to established CDH players out there. Not saying I'm really an established CDH player, but, you know, sometimes it feels like everything kind of ends out the same, and the goal of these deck techs is to demonstrate that there are a lot of ways to pretty much do the exact same thing, but it's really the journey, not really necessarily the destination that we're interested in. So just fun little things like that, and also to really demonstrate the fact that you don't need Thassa's Oracle all the time to actually win a game. You can actually win in other colors. So I think that's really the big take home here. But anyway, yeah, so if you enjoyed listening to this Deck Tech episode, you can check out all the other CDH Deck Techs I have done on this podcast channel, or just any of the episodes in general on those usual podcast outlets. That is going to be your Google, Apple, Spotify, PlayerFM, Rockcast, Podcast, Overcast, Breaker, Podbean, and probably a million others. Honestly, there's just so many podcast outlets out there, I can't name them all, but if it's a major podcast outlet, you can probably find my stuff on there. You can also find me on the Twitters at MTG in quarantine, as well as on Instagram, TikTok. I don't really do much over there, but it's got some couple videos up there and various other things as well. So if you want to check all that stuff out, you can go find those in the link tree in the episode description below, along with my Quiver Time brand ambassador link and Ink Gaming reference code, both of which will help support the channel if you make a purchase and is greatly appreciated. And if you want to pick up your own Quiver Time products, you can use promo code MTGIQ, again, all lower caps, MTGIQ, for 10% off your order. So again, make sure to do that and pick up some really awesome products while you're at it. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give another huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So another round of thank yous to Mr. Big Bence, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, and Coach J-Row for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name is MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.